What's up, everybody? Welcome to SWAT MMA. This is episode number 157. I am Jared here with Paul.
What up?
Coming to you from Las Vegas, Nevada. Today, we are joined by Chevy, the wild man Bridges, as he prepares to fight Kevin Kroom at the upcoming BKFC Knuckle Mania 3 Extravaganza on February 17th. After that, Paul and I will be discussing some of the big fights from UFC 283. And man, we just have to sit down and have a serious conversation about Dana White's Power Slap League. Before we get to the combat sports and the Slap League, let's get into the weed of the week. Smoke weed every day.
Well, it's a real stony one today.
Is it? I'm about to hit this little bomb.
I should load a fresh one for you. That kind of killed that.
It did kind of kill that. Well, I'll load it. What are we smoking on today, Paul?
Today we're smoking on some Double Crush.
Double Crush?
Yes, sir.
It's a new strain for me. I don't even think I've heard of it.
Yeah, so this one's going to be a cross of Chem Dog 91 and Chem Crush, which is San Fernando Valley, mixed with Chem Dog 91 also.
Oh, okay. So we got Chem on both sides. Now, you know,
yes, sir.
I'm a fan of the Chem Dog.
Yes, sir. That's why I told you to load a fresh one, because I want you to get an actual, like, full effect.
Because
we didn't smoke this weed before the show, so.
No.
You get, this is a live reaction, sir. Yeah, this one is made by the Real McCoy.
The Real McCoy?
Mm-hmm.
I haven't smoked from this grower before either.
I have not either. So this comes in at a nice 26% THC. Well, 26.5, so close to, like, 27. Ooh, yeah. Got some pretty solid terpene profile, some limonene, myrcene, linalool, and B-carophyllene. So this one is also a hybrid. So, you know.
Oh, I like that flavor. That's
a rare hybrid.
Yeah, maybe that's why I haven't heard of it. That's nice. All those buds look nice too, man.
Mm-hmm.
Nice and green.
It's got kind of like a cheese smell.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Well, that's a winner. I'm digging it. I like it a lot.
Yes, sir. Pick that one up at the source.
Oh, my goodness. You got that from the source?
Yeah.
I haven't been there. How's that place doing these days?
It's cool. It's right next to my work, so I just kind of, you know, sneak there every once in a while.
I have been getting most of the weed I get from dispensaries, from the dispensary.
Yeah, I like that place, too. I do like that place, too.
All right, well, let's go ahead. We have got an exciting guest today.
Right. Joining us today is Chevy, the wild man Bridges, who is gearing up for a big fight at the upcoming BKFC Knuckle Mania 3 event on February 17th. He's taking the time out of two training sessions today to sit down and chat with us for a little while. Thank you so much for sitting down with us, Chevy.
Hey, man, I appreciate you guys having me.
Absolutely. Well, listen, we're excited, and our audience is excited to hear about, you know, the Knuckle Mania fight and what's going on with that. But we like to kind of rewind things back a little bit and tell our audience and us, like, where are you from originally?
I'm from a little town in Oklahoma called Durant, in the Texas-Oklahoma connection area, where they're connected at.
Are you still in that general area now? Are you still training out of Oklahoma?
Yes, yes.
What was it like growing up out there in that area?
More of like the country lifestyle. Not a lot. It's a small town. There's like a lot of open fields, you know, rodeos, horses, stuff like that. Or getting into trouble or getting into fights.
When you say small town, how small are we talking?
Well, now it's a lot bigger. I don't know the exact size of it, but I mean, it'd take maybe 30 minutes to walk from one end to the other.
Okay,
probably it's pretty small. Like, as kids, you know, used to jump on a train and ride from one side to the other, go to Walmart, so.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, dang.
What was school like out there? Did you find yourself getting in a lot of fights in school? You just mentioned fighting a little bit a second ago.
Yeah, not like a ton of fights, like every week or nothing, but I did get in a few little scraps in school. school was all right. It was, like I said, small. Everyone knew everybody. Everyone's family knew everybody. We all grew up together from daycare, almost elementary through high school. It wasn't bad. That's kind of where I found myself as a fighter when I got into wrestling, and it all started kind of puzzling in together. So,
with that being said, like, what was it like when you first stepped into like an MMA, like boxing gym? Were you like, did you feel at home? Were there any like nerves, or was it just like for second nature to you?
It definitely wasn't second nature right away. There was a few nerves because I was never really into that type of stuff growing up a whole lot, and kind of just had the right opportunity following my lap to where I could get into it, and the right kind of people that were taking me in to get me into it and get my feet wet, so to speak. And after I started, like I said, wrestling and really taking it more serious and not feeling like somebody's punching bag, and I started getting better at it, and that's when I really started feeling like the second nature came in, was when I started doing wrestling.
Okay.
Were you wrestling in high school?
Yes. Yeah, I just wrestled in high school, and I did it only for to help my MMA technique and, you know, training as well.
Was it an MMA gym or a boxing gym that you first went to, like outside of the school area?
It was an MMA gym, and it was like a fitness gym. They had tanning, they had a hair salon in there, they had all kinds of stuff, but they taught all styles that they had. So,
was that in your local town, or did you have to travel somewhere to do that?
No, that started here in Durant, and then that gym ended up closing down and getting bought by Nautilus Fitness, I believe, turned into just a weight gym, and then another gym in Denison opened up at that time, and that was where I had to travel. It was about 30 minutes from here to go train there full-time, and that was before I moved to Albuquerque to start training out there for the 5-6 years that I was out there.
Where are you training out of right now?
I'm in Durant right now. So, and I travel back and forth to Denison to a gym called Grip Game. Jiu-Jitsu is where I do a lot of sparring. And then I do a lot of my main training with my main coach here at Tushka Boxing Club.
At which boxing club?
Tushka Boxing Club.
Okay.
Nice. And like switching over to the bare knuckle, how was that like that transfer? With already being like a small MMA gym, like, was bare knuckle something that was already on your radar, or was it like pretty foreign to everybody?
Pretty foreign, in a way. Like I've said previously, when I first got into it, I didn't take it serious at first. When I first seen bare knuckle on Facebook and everything, I thought it was something that was just there for a little bit, kind of like the street beefs or, you know, like the hay bale fights they had that would just pop up every now and again. And then, I was still into MMA. I was still trying to pursue that career, you know, make myself a better striker, a better wrestler, move up, and working hard towards that also while raising a kid, you know. And one day I seen the highlights for one of the previous fights they had. They were advertising the Artem Lobov and Jason Knight fight, and they were showing some highlights, so I guess some other contests they had. And so it caught my attention because I do like both those guys. So I watched the show. I watched the fight and was hooked immediately. It was like, oh, this is the real deal. They're not going nowhere. You know, these are bigger name guys. Like, they're only getting bigger. And I told my coach, I was like, I'm done. Like, I know I'm good at wrestling. I know I, you know, have a positive MMA career, but I don't like it as much anymore. It seems boring. Like, this is what I want to do. That speaks to my primal side. And we put everything down and went to a tryout in Omaha, Nebraska on a, like, 4-day notice from Durant, Oklahoma. Just drove up to Nebraska, and they had us kind of, like, lightly spar with no gloves and hit a meter, and it was just amazing. It was the people that was there, the experience, and I wanted to do it more, and I got hooked up with my manager and finally got my fight, and the rest was history.
I bet that the tryout process was a pretty amazing time. We just had another BKFC fighter from Omaha. Houston Alexander was on the show last week.
Okay, yeah, cool.
Yeah, yeah. He's kind of a fairly known community leader and stuff in Omaha. Were there a lot of guys at the tryout process? I'm always intrigued by those. I know they put some of the footage on the website and the app, but I haven't had a chance to really watch a lot of it. What was that like?
I think there was like somewhere between, I want to say, 30 to 50 people maybe. And it was, I mean, the gym was packed. it was pretty cool. I mean, the whole mat system was packed. All the bags were taken. They had to split us up into twos to do interviews in the training side. So it was just really neat. Met some really cool people. Had some good conversations with some really good people up there. Mateo Fonda, who fights for BYB now, he's actually about to go to London. I talked to him up there. That's where I met him. I like to think a pretty good buddy of mine now. It was just cool, man, getting to see Omaha. Like I said, I'm a small town kid, so they've really, bare knuckle has opened the door for me to see the world more than MMA has. MMA has kind of kept me in a local, smaller aspect, a smaller area of states. With bare knuckle, I've been all the way to Florida, Vegas, you know, Kansas, Nebraska, Louisiana, multiple times, Mississippi. I've been to places I've never thought I'd ever be. So,
and with that being said, like, how does it feel to be able to, like, showcase your talents on these, like, big landmark cards for BKFC? You had your chance being on Knucklemania 3 and also kind of getting it all kickstarted, like, onto the main card. Like, how does that feel for you, being someone who's been a part of this whole process?
It feels great, not just for me, but for my coach, because we come from a small town, you know. She doesn't have a crazy impressive boxing record herself. You know, she doesn't compete in boxing, but she has the credentials for boxing. She does all the research for boxing, and a lot of people disregard her, don't take her serious. They, you know, so we've had people try to tell me that they that she's gonna ruin my career because she doesn't know what she's doing. I'm, you know, just wasting my career being with her and training with her. So it feels great and amazing to not only take my first bare knuckle fight on the biggest bare knuckle stage on 12 days notice, win my first round knockout against a guy who was in the hometown that's supposed to beat me. Mm-hmm. So that was great. And then we get asked to get brought on the Knucklemania, which is their biggest show of the promotions. The owner of the promotion was on his feet. The crowd was on their feet. It was a bloody fight. It was what the people liked. And then I had a year layoff, and now they're bringing me back again for Knucklemania 3, which makes me the first male fighter to fight on Knucklemania twice in a row. And I'm not a top five fighter. I'm not a very big name bare knuckle fighter yet. I'm not a champion, obviously. The only other person who's fought on Knucklemania twice in a row is Britton Hart. And she's a champion, and she's top five and a very popular name of bare knuckle.
Yeah.
So for me to do that on my own from a small town with nothing but my coach behind me, it's great. It's magical. And showing all of them, like, you're wrong.
Dude, that's awesome. I think that's a great story.
In the history of bare knuckle, that will always be there. And so no matter if I go 1-18 in bare knuckle, I will always be the first male fighter to be featured on their biggest card twice in a row. And I didn't beg to be on the card. They asked me to be on the card. So that, to me, is just an achievement for me and my coach alone to shut everybody up. Like, my career's not wasted because I'm being brought on the biggest card on the biggest promotion of one of the most fastest growing sports of our time.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that what you just said speaks for itself. They put you on that card for a reason. And BKFC is, you know, I think long ago surpassed that kind of novelty bit that we mentioned kind of at the beginning of the interview. I don't know if it was sticking around. We felt the same way, you know, but no, they're here to stay. They've got Triller behind them now with a lot of cash, and they're putting on these Knucklemania shows. And I don't think it gets, you know, any higher of an honor for a fighter, for yourself right now, than to be featured on a card like that. And let's talk about that for a second. You're fighting a guy named Kevin Kroom on there, who, as far as we know, I think he's a former UFC fighter. He's a little bit older. How do you feel about that fight?
I feel great, man. It's going to be great for the fans. I know neither one of us are the most technical boxers, but we come to fight. We're not afraid to bite our mouthpiece and give the crowd a good show. He's got a big name. Yes, he's coming from the UFC. So I think that's going to be a great win for me. It's going to show the world that I'm not just some little bitty spot filler they keep putting on a card, that I'm here to stay and that I can beat these guys and become a big name in the sport and be a top five. So it's great. I love it. It's going to be a fun night.
When you prepare for a fighter such as him, he's, you know, you said he's been around for a while. It's true. He has. Are you watching, like, a lot of tape on it? I mean, it's not really applicable to a bare knuckle fight, but it can give you a bit of a feel. Or do you leave that more in your coach's hand?
I leave that all to my coaches. And in MMA, I would do a lot of tape watching to see what the strategies they prefer, what they would do in hot situations. But in bare knuckle, it's such a wind whirl of a sport. Like, yes, one person could be better boxer than the other, whatever, better hands, hit hard or whatever. But a bare knuckle touches you in the right spot at the right time. It can either hurt you in a way that you didn't expect, so your brain shuts off for a second so you don't want to fight, or it just shuts you completely off and you go to sleep. So I don't care. I let my coaches do all that. They put me through training that I need to do to be ready, and I show up to fight. He's either a better fighter than me. Damn, we'll see what happens.
Who are if we can shift gears up just a little bit and shift out of this particular fight? You've been in both MMA and now you've been in bare knuckle, and obviously you're training boxing as well. Are there fighters that you particularly look up to in any one of those overall disciplines that maybe you're using as an example or an inspiration?
When I was in MMA, I looked up to GSP a lot when I was younger, and I followed him a lot and tried to mirror his style, so to speak. But now that I've gotten a bare knuckle, a lot of the boxers that I do like to look at, Vasily Lomachenko is one of them. I love his movement, his hand speed, his drills that he does. Tyson Fury, I love his outlook on being a fighter, how he's honest and with people about the stuff. How you should just live your life and say, you know, pretty much give everybody the finger. So those are my main ones. I don't really follow a whole lot too much. There are some bare knuckle guys that I look up to, but I wouldn't say as idols, more of just like they're my favorite bare knuckle group to watch fighting. They're really exciting, and I try to take bits and pieces of stuff that they do in their fights to incorporate it to my stuff.
And then also, like, you know, obviously training and becoming the best bare knuckle boxer is obviously the first thing on your mind, but what do you find yourself doing outside of fighting that you really like?
Right now, man, I'm just trying to make sure I can be the best that I can be while I have time to do this, because with bare knuckle, the sport is not very long. I try to do anything I can with animals. I love to be hands-on with animals. I'm working on getting a dog and everything right now. It's at a buddy's house. It's still not old enough. A little puppy. I'm trying to work with different wildlife organizations and works with those to try to do some stuff like that. So more of anything, just outside wildlife, getting out of the house.
Yeah, that always feels good. I miss that. I used to live in Colorado. I had a lot more nature and wildlife. I moved to Vegas about 10 years ago. And I mean, it's just, you know, city life surrounded by desert.
Yeah.
And I miss getting out in nature and interacting, because I like wildlife a lot too, and just getting out there and doing that type of thing. It's I find it relaxing. I'm sure you do as well.
Yeah, I mean, one of my favorite things to do, like right now it's cold, so it's a little hard, but when the weather's right, I like to get up real early in the morning before I work out and, you know, drink my cup of coffee on my porch. And my neighbor, well, I say neighbor, he's got across the little highway strip, he's got a big field, and then it's his house, but he's got some kind of bird dogs or tracking dogs. I don't know what they are, but he gets them on his little side by side and puts a big rod on the front of it and ties all five of them up to his little rod and runs them around his whole property.
Uh-huh.
Every morning, training them and getting them in shape and stuff. And so that's just one of my favorite things to do in the morning, is just sit there and watch him do that and watch cars drove by. It's so peaceful.
Yeah, for sure. You mentioned earlier, are you married? You have kids? You got a big family?
Yeah, my son will be 4 February 13th.
Oh, wow. So just a few days before the event.
Yep.
Oh, that's exciting. So February 17th is the big date. I'm sure our listeners before then, or they're going to want to get to, you know where they can connect with you on social media, learn a bit more about you. What is the best spot for them to find out more about Chevy the Wild Man Bridges?
I've got a TikTok, I've got a Facebook, and an Instagram. I'm way more active on Instagram and Facebook than anything. All my handles are on my Facebook bio. Just look up Chevy Wildman Bridges, and you'll have a person and get a hold of me on OnlyFans. I have a page there as well that I'm working with them for fitness tips, you know, workout sessions, nutrition tips, behind the scenes, weight cutting stuff, training footage. So.
Oh, well, that's
any of my social media. It can be. I mean, it's OnlyFans, so, you know, a lot of people kind of look at it weird still, and there are some bold requests out there. So,
yeah, but it's a medium.
We're trying to work on that and give it another view to show that, you know, it's for healthy living, for athletes, for influencers and actual content creators, not just bold requests.
No, for sure. I think that's good. I've noticed a lot of fighters across both BKFC. There's boxers now, and of course, there's MMA fighters are doing OnlyFans pages for that very reason. You know, it gets that reputation that it has because of a small percentage, but there's actually, it's a great way to connect with fighters and other people that you're interested in. So we'll definitely encourage our listeners to search for you there, as well as Chevy the Wildman Bridges on Instagram, where they can find all of the other links. And look, you've got the big fight coming up. It's Knucklemania 3. It's February 17th. Everybody should tune in and check that out. BKFC is one of the best deals in combat sports. It's $5 a month. I think it's the best $5 you can spend in the most exciting, growing sports in combat sports right now. It's my favorite. It used to be UFC was my big deal. It's evolved into BKFC because there's literally never a dull card, dull fight.
Yep. Yeah. Even when it kind of looks like there's nobody you know in it, it's like, man, maybe this fight might be boring. That's something happens.
Absolutely.
Something happens exciting. And you know, you said they have a deal right now. $4.99 is correct. And if, like I said, if you guys check out my Facebook for all my stuff, there's also a referral link for the app that will give you the second month free for $4.99 a month. So,
you see, well, there you go, everybody. Really, you know, great. Where to go now. Instagram.
I know they have a deal for the yearly subscription, but I'm not 100% sure on what that is. So, but I know it's a great deal. It's like $49.99 for the year. So,
yeah, you can't beat that. That's half the price of one UFC pay-per-view. I mean, yeah, shit.
Exactly.
Well, listen, we've really enjoyed sitting down and talking with you. Thank you so much for joining us today, Chevy. We know you're busy. You had training session this morning. You're on break right now. You're heading back to another one tonight. So thank you so much for sitting down with us.
Yep. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely, man. All right. Appreciate you guys taking the time today to have me.
For sure. Absolutely. And best of luck on February 17th.
Appreciate you guys. Maybe we can get together afterwards and celebrate.
Absolutely, yes, man. We love to. We'll stay in touch, all right?
Yes, sir.
All right, thanks. Bye. Thank now.
All right. Yes. I'm really looking forward to not only Chevy's fight, but that entire Knucklemania 3 card is going to be pretty exciting. We're going to dive deep into that here as we get closer to February 17th.
Yeah, those Knucklemania cards seem to be like the progression of BKFC UC and like at each tier. So
yeah, they're getting bigger and bigger each year.
Yeah, so that should be very big. Well, let's dive into some UFC. So last night we had UFC 283. Pretty good card overall. Before we dive into the fight, though, I do want to talk about something a little bit. And that's live events. You know, I think the live events are, if they weren't back before, they're definitely back now. We just saw a card last night where just like a fucking... a crowd was just so lively and so loud that you could have sworn, like, are they like feeding them through the mics here? What's going on? Because it was loud in there.
It was. Brazil was really happy to have so many of their fighters showcased from top to bottom on the card, and they made their presence known.
And a lot of them came out and won too. There was a lot of like really good performances by a lot of different Brazilian fighters. I mean, in the two main event, in the co-main event, is kind of where those things stopped, but. Overall, I thought it was a good night for the Brazilian fighters.
Look, and basically what you're saying is fight nights at the Apex suck.
Yeah, more or less, yeah.
There's no noise, no crowd, no energy. It's boring. Honestly, dude, I'm not even watching them anymore. Yeah. I didn't watch the last one last week. I'm catching the highlights, and I love mixed martial arts. I just can't. They're so long.
Yeah.
They're dreary. I can't do it. This was the whole different world last night in Brazil. Very exciting card, and you're right. I mean, having the crowd there makes a big difference, but
yeah.
It looks like the UFC does not care one iota about the overall viewer experience. What they're caring about is the fact it's so cheap to put on shows at the Apex, and ESPN's paying them the same amount of money, so that's how they're saving on the bottom line.
That's true.
But let's talk about the fights, man. What about Jessica Andrade, dude? We talked to her about her a little bit beforehand. We both got the chance to meet her at UFC X. We were rooting for her last night. And I mean, look, man, she put it on Laura Murphy. She came in, Laura Murphy was ranked fourth. Jessica was like eighth. Yeah. She came in there and beat her down from pillar to post. You know what's bad when we start talking about how tough fighters are? Kind of like the main event, which we'll get to. But this is the same thing. The commentators wouldn't shut up about how tough Lauren Murphy is. And after a while, it gets a little bit rough because...
Well, Andrade hits so hard, too, for her weight class. Like, she's a tough, tough, like, contender. And I think Lauren Murphy just wasn't ready for everything.
Dude, Lauren Murphy's real good, but Andrade was on another level. Yeah. What did you think about...
former champion, yeah.
Do you feel that fight should have been stopped at any point by the corner? Because Daniel Cormier certainly did, and he would not stop talking about it.
See, I think there should be a lot more fights in the UFC stopped by their corner than there is. So, like, I tend to agree with what DC was saying. But, I don't know. It's always, like, touch and go with those, like, situations. You know, when you throw the towel in some people, you'll get flack from people being like, well, there's always a puncher's chance. And then when you don't throw the towel, you also get flack for the people that are like, come on, you're fucking making, you know, making decisions on people's
I thought it
lives,
was borderline that her corner could have stopped it. I don't think the ref should have stopped it at any point because she wasn't wobbly. She wasn't out. She was just – her face was looking bad. Yeah. But my question would be, do you think that – what if those punches didn't cut her face up so bad? Would Daniel Cormier have been saying the same thing? What if she's just taking shots but she wasn't wearing them so bad?
I don't know because, like, we've seen fights like that where it, like, changes fighters' careers forever, you know, where they don't necessarily don't get cut up as bad, but they just are taking it all on their head, and damage to the brain is not something that should be taken lightly, in my opinion.
Was he calling for Glover Teixeira's fight to be stopped with that same energy? I don't really remember.
I don't remember. I don't really listen to the fucking the commentary that much like
I'm just curious. If you look at the stats, they're pretty similar as far as beatdowns go. Mm-hmm. I'm just wondering if he was saying that and near as much. I kind of tune him out.
Yeah.
I'm just curious. Turn it down. Just curious. But congratulations to Jessica. That was an ass whooping, and that's going to move her right on up in the rankings there.
Yeah.
What about your boy Johnny Walker taking on the Scotsman Paul Craig? Now we both picked Craig to win that fight. And Johnny Walker comes out with and does what?
Everything he needed to do, honestly.
Big KO.
Yeah. Big KO. I feel like that crowd energy, like we were talking about before, played a lot into it. Like he felt that vibe from the walkout to the octagon. Like it was a classic, like, you know, hometown guy getting a big win, you know.
He seems to be sticking with SBG, Kavanaugh, McGregor's old team.
Yeah. Which is cool, I guess.
Paying dividends, apparently.
I just feel like Johnny Walker just has, like, natural deficiencies in some of his skills that are just hard to overlook. And I thought that's why I thought he was going to lose this fight. I thought Craig was going to take this to the ground and submit him. But he comes out with the victory, and when he's on, he's on. You know, mm-hmm. He's one of those guys. And I'll talk a little bit more about it when we talk about the main event, but I do think light heavyweight is in a weird – like, spot that it has been before.
Oh, is it a... Yeah, for sure. It's a shit show at the moment, in my opinion.
But, yeah, great performance by Johnny Walker, and, you know, he just moves on up.
You know, we had the winningest fighter in welterweight history on the card tonight, and that's Neil Magny, for those who don't know. He broke George St. Pierre's record. He's going to add to that with a victory over Gilbert Burns, which certainly did not happen. I mean, Burns went in and handled him like he was...
Yeah.
He was on, you know, Chimaev level.
Fight. Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Which he is. I mean, he gave Chimaev everything he could handle. Yeah. But, yeah. I thought another, like I said before with Walker, another, like, performance where he got to put on in front of his you know, his hometown crowd, and everyone was just behind him at every moment, and it was just like, you know.
Neil Magny is a tough out for everybody except for Gilbert Burns, apparently, because he came out and just fucking worked him, which I thought was pretty impressive. And then afterwards, he calls out Colby Covington, which I think would be a good fight. You know, he'd been trying to get that Masvidal fight, but Masvidal don't want that smoke. That's what's going on. Gilbert Burns would destroy fucking Masvidal.
Yeah, I really think there's only like two people I could really see Burns fighting next, and it's Colby or Bilal Muhammad. Those are like the only two fights that in the weight class, they're both all like in that weird top four or five of welterweight that are all like in gridlock. And
yeah,
these guys got to start fighting each other, you know?
We're going to have something clear up in the division here soon because, you know, we had Edwards versus Usman confirmed,
yeah,
you know, over these past couple of weeks. And that's going to move some shit. But Gilbert Burns brought up Colby Covington again in the post fight and had some interesting things to say about how he ran into Colby in a poker room outside of Florida. And Colby's waving him over, and Burns is like, oh, it's on, you know, thinking he's going to go over there and there's going to be some shit talking and some drama. And said it was quite the opposite. I said Colby was like super nice to meet him, super excited to see him, paid him nothing but respect, told him that, you know, hey, dude, I'm just playing a character. I have to make money. That's what I had to do. And they wound up having a nice conversation. And he said it was a little bit weird, but he said Colby was actually, he said, I'm not going to lie, Colby was super nice and respectful, and I liked him a lot.
Well, that's kind of the what's now become what Colby Covington is now. Because, I mean, before it was he would never break character with everyone. He was on. And then I think since that second Usman fight where he had made his money and he had, like, his opportunity to have his, like, kind of crowning event, and now he's just more of a mainstay in the division, I just see, like, he talked about it a lot more, like in that lead up to
a little
more
open. I think he's a little bit tired of people just constantly giving him shit. Like,
well, I think that, and now he's also established.
Like, or not just giving him shit, but I mean, like, not just giving him, like, you talk shit, you get shit talked back. I mean, giving him shit like you're a garbage human being. Like, you as a person are a piece of garbage because of your act.
Yeah.
Like, well, I think that bugs him.
And that's what I mean, though, too, is I think that now he's made his, like, his money and he's made his, like, name become a part of the mainstays of the welterweight division and the UFC, that he has a certain dollar value that he garners no matter what.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And he's earned it. He's a hell of a good fighter.
Yeah.
You got to give that guy respect as a fighting.
Oh, yeah. He's a good fighter. Yeah.
You know, his character moments. But I think that is a fight that could happen, but I don't think we're going to hear anything until Usman Edwards trilogy.
Not only that, I also heard some shit about Colby Covington that he might not fight for a while because that whole lawsuit between him and Masvidal, he is claiming that he would receive brain damage from that incident where he got sucker punched by Masvidal and is being told by his lawyers not to fight until their lawsuit has been wrapped up. Because the dollar amount in which you can get when you're talking about someone gave you brain damage versus you saying you have brain damage and then going and signing up to get more brain damage are two different things.
All I'm going to say is George Masvidal fucked around and now he's finding out. Dude. You want to take shit and do stupid shit? I mean,
he's going to get, yeah.
It's not the path I would take if I was in Colby's shoes, I don't think. I mean, my initial reaction is hell no, but I mean, I don't really know because I'm not in those shoes. But I mean, my initial reaction is I definitely wouldn't take it, but I don't really know. None of us do. But it's what he's doing and it's what's legally correct. I mean, Masvidal is the dumbest thing I've ever seen anybody do.
And that's why I think that the Bilal Muhammad fight might happen instead of Colby Covington also, because you got Muhammad who just beat Sean Brady. He's fifth. And
he wants that Chimaev Burns, smoke, though. That's what
he wants. He wants Chimaev bad.
Yeah. Although you think Chimaev is going to go to 85?
I don't know. That's all in the conversation. But well, but yeah.
Burns is likely to get something.
Burns is going to get one of those top five guys.
Without a doubt.
Wouldn't mind him throwing it back with fucking Chimaev also. Fucking run it back five rounds this time.
Yeah, me neither. Definitely five rounder.
But so let's get into the co-main event and the main event. So two very similar fights, in my opinion. You had the co-main event with Brandon Moreno taking on Davison Figueiredo in their fourth fight and the end of the rivalry. And I thought it was a pretty clear ending, to be honest. You know, we had Moreno go out there and pretty much just pick Figueiredo apart and then ends in a doctor stoppage between rounds.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. There's really no denying that. I mean, you can just look at the numbers. I mean, it was stopped after the third round. There was minor controversy. It wasn't an eye poke. Moreno threw kind of an awkward punch that hit in an awkward way where just his thumb knuckle went in Figgy's eye, which is perfectly legal.
Which
it's
is
not
legal,
illegal.
Yeah.
That's part of your fist you're making. That's what happened.
Yeah.
So
it would have been different if, like, his thumb was out.
No, his thumb was closed. His to be clear, his thumb was closed, and it was just the way the punch landed. It landed with that part of his glove, and it went in his eye and fucked it all up.
And then it also kind of looked a little weird, too, because he hits him with the punch, right? And then this, like, to, like, shift, like, through, he pushes off of Figueredo, but he opens his hand and palms his head. Like, that's one thing. It's like, people are like, well, if he didn't poke him the first time, he got him the second time. It's like, no, he palmed his head and pushed off of him, which we've seen people do all the time.
Yeah, he didn't get him in the eye. It was legal.
Yeah, I thought
he was. He was, like you said, he was whooping that ass beforehand. Let's look at the stats. It was 85-24 on total strikes, 48-19 on significance, 3-6 on takedowns for Moreno, 1-2 for Figgy.
But I thought the real difference here was when you look at the control time. When you look at damn near 7 minutes of control.
Yeah, 7 minutes for Moreno versus 35 seconds on one
takedown. Three rounds. Right? Like, come on.
So, I mean, I don't see any controversy here. Moreno solidified his position as a flyweight champ. You know, in case you didn't know, he is Mexican of descent.
Actually, did you know he's the first two-time Mexican-born
as well as the first-time Mexican-born lightweight champion. So he holds two very distinct records. Again, if you didn't know, Mexico.
It's from Tijuana, too, in case you didn't know.
Like, God, Dana White's just seeing dollars. Sorry, I'm just thinking how many times they can say that and just sell pay-per-views.
Right. He might take the slap league to Tijuana one of these days.
He might. Have Moreno be a guest referee.
He probably will.
But no, Moreno just really, really put it on him. I was super impressed. I had picked Figueredo to win.
I'd pick Figueredo just because of that whole Kraus situation. And I think that's another thing when you talk about Brandon Moreno's performance here is his ability to overcome the adversity that was getting pretty much his whole team pulled out of under him 6 weeks before a fight.
Mm-hmm. Yes, so much.
And, like, that's a big thing. Like, people can say what they want, but, like, your team is really everything. When you lay out a camp, it's not just like you just go day by day and you're like, well, I'm going to go train here today and then I'm going to go train there tomorrow.
No,
like,
he lost Kraus and
his head coach 6 weeks before a title bout. That was a guy who he need to come in and have a general game plan, because I feel like when you look at the version of this fight and the other fight that was different than the draw and the fight that he lost, is I think he had a distinct game plan where he just went and took control of what he could control. Like this, like when he lost to Figueredo the third time, I thought he let Figueredo handle, like, start the whole, like, everything was going through him and he was more defending. In this fight, he went out and brought the fight to him and took him down and brought, you know, put pressure on him constantly. And I feel like for him to do that without a coach or really a structure behind him so close leading into the fight is just so impressive that you have to, like, tip your cap to him.
Yeah, absolutely. Congratulations to Brandon Moreno. I think he's going to be holding on to that belt for a while now.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the main event, which really is not that surprising when you think about it.
No.
But we have Jamahal Hill come in and just really, really, really put it on Glover Teixeira.
Yeah, Jamahal looked great. Like, really, really good.
I mean, he landed 248 strikes to 108.
At a 57% clip, too. Like,
he stuffed 15 takedown attempts out of 17 total.
Those head kicks he was landing, too, were fucking nasty.
Yeah, he really did a lot of damage to Teixeira, and he came out and just showed that he belongs at the top of this weird division that's or not weird division, but division that's in a weird spot right now, like you were saying.
Yeah.
But congratulations to him. You know, he wanted to test himself against the best, like he was saying on Ariel's show, and then the lead up in the UFC embeds and whatnot. And he came out and then he did it. It was very impressive.
You know what? I kind of want to take back something I said last night when we were talking. I don't know if Yuri could really whoop Jamahal either. Because I kind of talked to, I thought that when I was watching, I was like, this is kind of like, you know, one of those things where these guys will, like, be a placeholder and Yuri comes back. When you look at how Yuri and Glover share the fight went, and you look how Jamal just completely dominated Glover, that, like, that really means something. Like, Yuri had everything Glover could give him in, like, had times in that fight where I thought it was pretty much wrapped up that he was going to lose. There was never a single moment in this fight that I was thinking Jamal Hill was going to lose.
No. Yuri's a little wild. He leaves himself open for shots, and who knows how he'll come back after his shoulder surgery.
Yeah.
But on to play devil's advocate, at some point when you're 43 years old, it just catches up to you when you're fighting these young guys all the time. And that's taking nothing from Hill, but how many times can Glover come out and just keep winning these fights against these young guys like this?
Yeah.
Sometime someone's going to whoop his ass. Now, he did decent. I mean, I felt like he was in the fight, despite the fact he was clearly losing. He was landing shots. He's got power.
Yeah.
He could have got a, you know, a surprise knockdown, landed on him, got a sub. It didn't happen. He went out on the shield. I want to talk about after the fight for a minute because, I mean, judging by the lack of reaction on social media and other shit, I'm probably the only person that was offended by this. I don't know. Maybe it's just because I don't like Daniel Cormier. But I felt that Hill was having a very important moment, obviously. Like, before the fight, the winner was announced. Everybody knew who won.
Yeah.
He was crying. I don't mean slight tears were running down the face. Yeah, I mean, he was bawling in his coach's arms, all right? Yeah. And I don't mean any disrespect. And then when he was handed the belt and it was announced, he was so overcome with emotion, he falls to his knees, his fucking forehead's on the canvas.
Yeah.
Right? And he deserves that. That's like this everything this dude's been trying to do his whole fucking life. He decided he wanted to take a gamble and test himself against the best, and he fucking came out and, like, did it.
Yeah.
He's all this goddamn emotion, and Daniel Cormier gets down on his knees and sticks his fucking microphone, like, down in his face while the guy's still, like, crying and trying to have his moment.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what the – like, for fuck's sake. That's really not necessary.
Yeah.
We don't need to hear him crying on camera. Let the man just have his minute.
Yeah.
If Cormier didn't know what to do, all he had to say was something like, hey, everybody, I'm going to interview this man, but let's let him just have a moment and soak this up for a minute, everybody.
Yeah.
Show him some appreciation right now, everybody.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And everybody would have fucking cheered some more.
Yeah.
And then he would have soaked in another 20, 30 seconds, right?
Yeah.
And then the man would have stood up. And then they had their fucking interview.
Yeah.
Instead, Cormier is down on his knees like a, I don't know what the fuck. What are you, paparazzi?
Yeah.
Like,
exactly.
Jamming microphones in this poor man's face and asking him, what does it feel like to tell us right now what you're feeling? Bro, we can see what he's feeling.
Yeah.
Shut up.
Yeah. No, for real. No, I agree.
Like, just, and it's not because, like, I just feel like, let him, he earned that shit. Like, don't ruin it with your fucking mic in his face.
Yeah.
Just give him a minute. Dude.
Yeah.
I didn't get it at all. But whatever.
So
congratulations to him.
Yeah.
To Hill. That, I
mean, Hill's a dog.
Dude.
Hill's a dog. And I think that so what I was alluding to earlier, this is kind of what I'm viewing the light heavyweight division as. I think it's in a very similar spot than it was when divisions go from like these dominant champions to dominant champions, you know?
Yeah.
And I feel like, you know, in those early 2000s, after Chuck Liddell beat Randy Couture and he went on that, like, little run of, like, 3, 4, 5 title defenses, everyone was like, you know, he was the man. And then he loses to Rampage Jackson. And then the title kind of switched hands, like, over and over and over.
Yeah,
cause we had
all around.
Because we had, like, all these different, like,
Cheetah.
Yeah, like, all these different, like, styles and all these different, like, specialists came through and beat other people at where they were deficient at. And I feel like that's kind of what the light heavyweight division is going to be at for like the next like bit of time until we see our next champion that is just like the complete package and it's going to be like dominant. I don't know who that's going to be. I don't even know if that guy's in the UFC right now. But I think that kind of similar to like, you know, that was like 2009 to 2000, or no, it was even before that, huh? Probably like 2007 to 2009, where we had like 4 or 5 different light heavyweight champions. nobody was necessarily super dominant. I feel like that's where we're kind of heading towards. Like,
I think
you know,
you're right. Sure.
Like, there's going to be all the, because that's kind of what we have in the division also. You know, you have, like, Arkalaev, who's a pretty, like, solid striker with pretty solid, you know, solid all the way around, but he's not a complete package. You have the Polish Power, who's on the end of his career and still carries some of that, but, you know, who knows how much time he has left. Obviously, Glover was kind of in that same situation. Santos, who was in the division, ends up leaving because, you know, he's in that same scenario. So you have all these guys who are just, like, you know, big punchers or good, mm-hmm. or, like, good at all these different things, that there's going to be the title's going to switch hands and people are going to get their time in the sun. And that's kind of a good thing for the division, I think. Because, you know, sometimes it can get stagnant when you have a dominant champion like John Jones. Because I think John Jones literally would have no problem with any of these guys, to be honest.
Yeah, I agree.
And
I think you're right.
And that's not a knock to those guys, but I think this is makes the ultimately makes the light heavyweight division more exciting, in my opinion.
Yeah, there's a lot coming up. We'll see what how long Yuri gets before he's back and what he's like when he returns.
Yeah.
And it could be exactly what you're saying. I think you're right.
Yeah.
Well, before we wrap the show, we got to talk about Dana White's Power Slap League. There's been a lot of controversy about that. It had its debut episode, you know, on the 18th on TBS. To, you know, rather dismal ratings, all things considered, is about 230, 40-something thousand yeah. people watched it, which you know, put it in what place for the night?
47th place that night.
47th in the Nielsen ratings for that. And this was the premiere episode, the one with all the hype on it, you know.
That was also set up by the number one viewed show prior to,
which
was AEW.
AEW but, you know, wrestling?
Yeah, they're like pro wrestling, yeah.
It's the biggest shit, yeah. Right?
Like, it's the biggest shit next to WWE, basically. They're
but
the
that
number,
night,
yeah, on Tuesdays, yeah. They're number one. And so they got, you know, they were directly following it. So
you think that's the right demographic, you would think.
Yeah, right.
Dana White.
Exactly. Slap League would fucking skyrocket to number two or top five because, you know, they're getting that same rub. So they even tried to give him the rub, and it just
didn't Well, I didn't out. Watch it. I'm not going to watch it. I did watch a few Twitter videos. Of some just knockouts that were just disgusting. And I don't mean that in a cool way. I mean, like, literally, as a fan of combat sports, a former boxer, I love all this stuff. I don't want to watch that shit. That was gross. Like, people are getting that to me is disgusting. And I was trying to figure out, why is this so popular? Like, I don't understand. You know, why is everybody else not looking at this and thinking this is gross? There's all these other slap leagues. And then I happened upon this YouTube video. The channel is like Penguins with a Z0. The guy's YouTube name is Moist Critical. He's got a massive YouTube channel. He's got 12 million subscribers. You know, he's the guy in the white T-shirt with the black hair, talks a lot of very dry humor, talks a lot of shit. But he apparently knows a lot about slap fighting, and he's a big fan, and he's apparently a guy that's been talking about slap fighting for a long time. And he put out a video that I had also seen where he just talked about the ridiculousness of some of those knockouts. And that video was apparently misconstrued by a lot of fans. He got a lot of pushback where people thought he was like a fan of the Dana White's league. So the other day he puts out a different video. I think it was called like, I don't like this or something. No, people are mad at me. And in one day, all right, just put this in perspective, that video had 3.1 million views in 24 hours. Dana White's Power Slap League had 250,000.
Okay. Yeah.
And in that video, though, he brings up a lot of things that I had no idea about. That there are rules in slap fighting that Dana White's Power Slap League is intentionally, it would seem, not enforcing.
Yeah.
And there were two main ones, right?
Yeah, it's the no stepping in, which makes a lot of sense. You don't want to give someone momentum on top of slapping the shit out of somebody. That's how you knock. So, like, that's obviously where they're getting these knockouts from. When the difference between just like turning your body and slapping someone or me being able to turn my whole body one way and then fucking slapping you is two different things, you know? And then also it's no palming, which
it's
is
called clubbing. Or
yeah.
Something.
Clubbing. Yeah. Where you can't hit people with the butt of your hand.
Yeah. You're technically supposed to hit, like if you drew a line above where your thumb is, you're supposed to hit with the upper part of your hand, the top half plus your fingers. So the top half of your palm, like the balls of your fucking hand and your fingers, you're not supposed to be hitting with the wrist and the palm, because that's essentially a palm strike, which is like
punching someone.
Yeah, it's the same as punching someone. So, and then he showed several clips where it was obvious clubbing that was going on in Dana White's Power League. And he said it's clearly that's what's happening. It's causing the KOs. And
dude, there's like some of those dudes, like mouths were like fucked too. Like teeth were getting knocked out and shit. I'm just like, God damn, bro. That's just too much.
There's a neuroscientist or neurosurgeon or something on Twitter who's been talking a lot about this. And if somehow folks listening, if you're don't quite understand what we're talking about, it's not slap fighting. There's no fighting going on here.
Yeah.
It's one person stands with no defense whatsoever while the other person slaps the shit out of them. And the rules are you can't defend yourself in any way whatsoever.
Which is nuts.
And apparently there's safety precautions in these smaller leagues where you can only, use this part of the hands that we're talking about. And,
yeah.
But in Dana White's Power Slap, they're allowing for full use of the palm and people stepping in and smacking the shit out of each other, presumably because it adds more of a knockout factor, yeah. Which we know Dana White likes.
Yeah.
And at some point, this becomes, to me, exploitation of people who are either desperate or can't save themselves. This is why fights are regulated.
Yeah.
And I know people say, well, they're grown adults. They can do whatever they want. Yes, they can. And there's also rules like in fighting. This is why there's a referee in fighting and a commission in boxing. It's not just people don't just get in and do whatever they want.
Dude, that's what's crazy too. Like you can get like knocked down in slap league and just get up and be like, all right, keep going.
So they show that one guy, he gets knocked out and then he goes into what's called the fencing pose.
Yeah.
Which is a reaction to a traumatic brain injury. It's an auto reaction to a definite traumatic brain injury. From what this neurosurgeon or scientist, forgive me for not knowing exactly, was saying on Twitter.
Yeah.
On our SWAT MMA Twitter account, I retweeted all of his stuff, so you can look in our feed to find what I'm exactly talking about. I should have brought it up beforehand, but it's just, dude, it's disgusting. I hope that his league completely flops and fails, and I had no idea they were disregarding those safety protocols like that.
Yeah, it's crazy. Nuts.
And I mean, what's next? Like, the guy in the video, the Moist Critical dude, said, like, what is it, next week they're going to, as a halftime show, they're going to be two guys take turns just smacking each other in the head with baseball bats. First one unconscious loses.
Well, that's the thing, too, is you really have to wonder how long this is going to go until, like, is this, like, Nevada State Athletic Commission regulated?
Yes.
Is it really?
That's because crazy. Dana White, that's why. That's sick, dude.
I'm in a bad way, sick, too.
Yeah, yes. Disgusting. Awful. Yeah. I don't support it at all. I hope it crashes and burns.
That's nuts.
And I really hope that there's a dramatic viewership drop next week. I hope that the 240,000 they got was just the people that had that. It's the first show. They want to see what all the noise is about. And people watch that, and I hope they're like a lot of people. Which I would say if a channel that big, if he's got 12 million subs, he's getting three. I mean, dude, there's TV shows don't get that kind of shit. Like, massively produced TV shows don't pull 3 million viewers.
Yeah.
But, like, if he was getting enough pushback, that would indicate to me that there's a whole lot of people that are disgusted by that. To the point where he's doing videos of that nature.
Yeah, that slap league shit is stupid.
Honestly, don't watch it.
It's just dumb.
We shouldn't support this type of thing. I wish the MMA sites wouldn't cover it.
Yeah. It's crazy.
Well, that's the show. That's what we wanted to say about that piece. We'd really like to thank our guest, Chevy the Wildman Bridges. We're wishing him nothing but best of luck in his fight against Kroom at the BKFC Knucklemania 3 on February 17th.
Yep.
We want to thank Binoid for sponsoring our Weed of the Week. You can get great deals on Binoid's CBD and hemp-derived THC products if you go where, Paul?
Get over to SWAT and May, hit the cool stuff button, buy a t-shirt, and support the podcast.
Thanks, everybody.
And then you can head over to Instagram and follow us at SWAT and May Podcast.
Peace.
Peace.